Hey there, everyone. This season is over. Since Hawk isn't with us anymore, tribute to him. I'm not sure if that was totally necessary or not, but this is your season-ending Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Doesn't mean there's not going to be podcasts during the offseason. We'll work on that as we go along here. But after the Blackhawks' final press availability of the season following the end of their season, Saturday night in Nashville, 5-2, it's Chris Bowden, your Blackhawks pre- and post-game host on WGN Radio. It's also Scott King, your Chelsea blogger, your NHL.com correspondent here. At our WGN studios on Sunday, a quick trip over here from the United Center after we had our last chance to talk to the guys. We'll hear from Stan Bowman. We'll hear from Jeremy Colleton on this podcast, among other things. I don't know if we're going to necessarily hear from any players because, Scott, they all kind of ended up saying the same thing when they met the media here. Yes, it's going to be great to open a training camp with knowledge of Jeremy and his system, under their belts. They think that's going to help them this year. They're encouraged by the steps taken this year, and they all think they're just a couple of players or two away and some tweaks or two away from becoming a playoff team again next year. I don't know if it's necessarily that simple. It's nice to say. Time will certainly tell on that, but that seemed to be kind of the theme running through the course of the afternoon and our last chance to talk to the guys.
It was. I thought, another maybe kind of secondary theme was Stan Bowman. Some of the players touched on his younger players stepping up, like DeBrincat and Strom. Gustafson, maybe not as young, but, him being maybe newer to the league, coming in and, being a defenseman who could quarterback a power play, have the breakout season he did. So, yeah, there was that, and these tweaks, the tweaks they need are not that easy. It's not a tweak necessarily to get a number one, number two defenseman. Maybe just getting one of those could make you a playoff team when you look at how things unfolded this year. But I think, the previous things you mentioned, especially having a camp, knowing Colleton's system already, the guys who played for him this year, even some of the guys who might have played a little for him in Rockford, helps. But there might be a handful of new players, you never know, they're kind of going to have to learn it in camp that didn't have experience with him this year. So it is going to be huge to kind of hit the reset button here.
Well, you'll hear Stan Bowman here in a bit talk about the fact that there will be changes. There aren't never changes made in any off season. I'm not sure if I phrased that right, but there are always going to be changes made every off season, even for Stanley Cup winners. And that certainly was the case a couple of times in the Blackhawks when their Stanley Cup, especially the first one. But Troy and I were talking about on our final postgame show Saturday night, the penalty kill. I'm not sure if it's tweaks in philosophy. You probably need to go out and get guys who are good at penalty killing because evidently what's on the roster right now is not going to be good enough. And to be the last-ranked penalty kill team in the league, that is going to, quote-unquote, kill you time and again over the course of a season, especially when points are at a premium. That's going to have to improve. The power play, it ended up at 20%, but it was like a power play sandwich where it was horrible the first couple months of the season. And then over the last month, it wasn't that good either. So between that, trying to find a face-off guy, trying to find a little bit more depth scoring, whether it takes trading one of these promising defensive prospects as part of a package in order to get a more veteran player who has a pedigree and a toughness and knows how to penalty kill, that may have to be part of the equation as well, because when you look at the defensemen who are available in free agency, they tend to skew as more offensive, and that's the last thing the Blackhawks need. There were a couple available last year that they weren't able to spend money on and probably would have suited them better this year, and now that particular market has seemingly dried up, at least as far as free agency goes. So they're subtle things. It's nice to have a number one goaltender once a frustrated Corey Crawford gets over his groin injury, which he thinks is going to take a couple of weeks.
I'm glad I didn't ask that question, by the way. Yeah. There's no other way to phrase it as to how's your groin.
Yeah, that was the opening question for Corey. And you can tell he's really ticked off because he was 60 minutes away from a completely healthy offseason. Finally got over the concussion stuff, and he seemed a little bit I don't know if it was down or salty. The fact that
yeah, I agree. He didn't look happy. He seemed, he seemed frustrated. Not, he wasn't frustrated towards anyone. At least when I was in there, for probably half of it. But his demeanor, he was a disappointed fellow. And I want to add to what you were saying about the PK. And as much as they have to go out and get guys who can kill, they might also have to replace maybe their best penalty killer. And Marcus Kruger is probably not going to, or one of their best this season. He may not be here next year.
And I don't think he will be there next year. And to be quite frank, he struggled on the penalty kill, too, towards the latter half of the season. He wasn't the face-off guy he was the previous time he was here. So as Troy and I were kind of discussing on the post-game show, or maybe it was one of the intermissions, when Stan rolls up his sleeves here, yeah, they have a bunch more salary cap space than they had a year ago and in previous years. I shouldn't just say a year ago, many previous years. But it's not like he's going to be able to go out and pick and choose whoever he wants. The Blackhawks have competition now with teams, other teams that can be enticing to players out on the market. They're not the king of the hill anymore, either in terms of the way they win and the facilities that they may necessarily have. Everyone else has, gotten up to snuff for the most part. So he's going to have to try to find the right matches and guys who can wear several hats, who can be a good face-off guy, who can be a good penalty killer. You thought he had that with Kruger this year, and I thought it was kind of a disappointment from what the Blackhawks, got in from what they probably expected out of him based on what Kruger had given them in the past. And, whether one of those penalty killers are also, at least a second pair defenseman, defensive defenseman that they can rely upon. He's going to have to mix and match with some of the guys that are on the market. I mean, a perfect fourth-line center who does it for Vegas and who kills penalties and who is very good in the faceoff dot is a guy like Pierre-Édouard Bellemare of Vegas, and he becomes a free agent. That could be a potential target. And we can throw darts at a dartboard with free agency. I'm kind of wondering if there might be an interest on Jeremy Colleton's part to bring Brock Nelson of the Islanders, a guy he used to play with, who becomes a free agent and is in his prime as well. And not so great on the faceoff dot, but guy who can provide some depth scoring too. I don't know. Yeah, there'll be some mixing and matching with, guys that are on the current roster too. So this is going to be an interesting offseason with how much Stan attacks this. He acknowledges that there are weaknesses that he needs to address. How well he can address them is going to be what's real interesting. Unfortunately, we have to wait till July 1st or so when that happens.
So who's this fellow he might bring over now?
Pierre-Édouard Bellemare? No, I thought Pierre-Édouard Bellemare was Vegas has the best fourth line in the league, and he is at the center of it. And if you're talking in terms of role players who can step up and do a job, that was just one name that popped out in terms of being a good face-off guy and who can serve multiple roles. And, there's a couple out there. There's wish lists, whether it's Ryan Dzingel coming back into the area or whether he wants to stay in Columbus where he went to college. People I know are fans and aren't fans of Matt Duchene. But the Blackhawks don't necessarily have the pick of the litter like they did. And granted, in years past when they were winning Stanley Cups, they didn't necessarily need the stars. It was those role player guys that they had to target. But those are going to be more difficult to come by here with the competition that they have.
When they were winning those Cups is when Kruger was at his penalty-killing best, right? And when Q can rely on him to be out there against the top matchups with those Stanley Cup clinching games ending. So, yeah, things have definitely changed. We'll see what they have to do, who they add going forward.
Let's hear now a stretch without further ado from Stan Bowman. A good chunk on a variety of topics here when he addressed the media. It was a total of about 30, 32 minutes or so. We're not going to bring all of that to you. We're going to pick and choose. But here's some of what Stan Bowman had to say as the season wraps up with 84 points and above 500, and actually not in last place in the Central Division either, as Minnesota slipped behind the Blackhawks. But again, for the second straight season, not making the playoffs and not winning a playoff series since they won the 2015 Stanley Cup.
The feeling is much different now than it was a year ago. I think we have a clear path forward of how we're going to be better next year. And just, you know, reflecting back on this season, it's been there's been a lot of things that have been happening, obviously, with a new coach coming in and our team getting adjusted to that. It took some time. But when, you know, you look at the last 50 games, we were playing at about 100-point pace. You know, and that's a pretty good chunk of the schedule. It's not like a 10 or 12 game segment where we got hot. I think for the last 50 games, we were playing, you know, like a team that could contend for the division title. But we had a lot of ground to make up. So the goal now is to build on that. I think, you know, we showed progress from a year ago till today, and we expect, you know, progress again going forward. So, you know, obviously we sort of look at it on a couple-year horizon. And like last year was sort of the low point. We're building to where we are now. And next year we expect to be even higher. So we're on the right path, and there's a lot of things to be excited about. And similarly, there's things that we need to improve, and that's our job between now and training camp.
Is the personnel as it stands now good enough in your mind, or do you need to make significant aggressive moves this summer?
Well, we're not going to bring the same group back. That's clear. We don't do that really any year. There's changes to every team. Even the team that ends up winning the Cup this year will have some different players. So we're going to have some new players next year. And what we're going to do is try to improve in the areas where we think our team needs some help. And you know, the way that looks isn't completely clear right now. But we have time over the next couple months to sort of dive in and look at our team in greater detail and figure out how we're going to make that happen. There's obviously there's free agent signings, there's trades, there's growth from within. Those are the ways that your team improves year to year, and we're going to do that. So we're going to have some new players here next year for sure. But we have a lot of players that are going to be back, and I think, you know, a lot of the key guys who had good seasons, they're coming back for sure. So, you know, we don't need across-the-board changes, but we do need some new players.
Do you feel like realistic expectations that you guys can make a few dents, whether it's trade or free agency, that you can go out and get a couple pieces?
Yeah, I would expect us to be more active in the summer free agent market than we have been in years past. I mean, first of all, we have the cap flexibility to do that. We haven't been in this position before. This is probably the first time ever we've had this much money to spend. Doesn't mean we're going to spend all of it on July 1st. You know, we have to sort of look over the next horizon of years and plan for that. But we weren't in this position a year ago or 2 years ago. You know, we were in shopping in a different marketplace. So we have the capability to look at that, and we're going to do that. Trades as well. You know, sometimes that's another way to depends on which kind of players you're looking for, if they're available in the summer. Sometimes they are, and sometimes you have to do it through trades. So there'll be some moving parts, but I wouldn't expect like sweeping changes. I think we've got a lot of good things here, and I think we showed that, like I said, our last 50 games we played you know, some really good hockey. So we're trying to build on that, not really change it dramatically.
Just address where you're at with Alex to bring it. I mean, would you like to have that kind of that contract sold out by summer, or you have, you know, talks with his agent, just kind of how that's obviously.
Yeah, that's really premature now to be talking about his contract. The season ended yesterday, but he had a great season. I mean, what a great first 2 years. Look at, you know, I think he came onto the scene with 28 goals in his rookie year. That was impressive. And he follows it up with a 40-goal season. So, you know, you look at where we're at, and there's reason for excitement about Alex. So, it's too early to say whether we're going to sign him leading into his year or at the end of his contract. That's a discussion we'll have with his agent. You know, that sometimes agents want to get it done quickly, sometimes they don't. You know, it's way too early to say on that.
How happy are you at this point with your defense, your top 6 to 8 that are here, and what's coming? Do you have a playoff-worthy defense either here or on the way for next year?
Well, the defense, obviously our goals against it was not a strength of our team this year. That's something we've got to improve on. So a lot of times that's what gets lumped into our defensemen as a group. And they play a large role in that. But it's not exclusively on them. It's a lot of times it's sort of a team-wide approach. And sometimes your forwards put your defensemen in a lot of tough spots. So there's no question that we have to improve and cut down on how many goals we give up. And I think we did show signs of progress, though, as the year went on. I think if you look at the last month of the season, not every game, but a lot of the games, we were much more, we played much more the way a good team would play. We didn't always match up our offense in those games. I think, you know, we went through a stretch there where we were really tightening it up. Even with the current group, you know, that the first half, it looked like they weren't good enough. And then all of a sudden, you know, we start playing better as a team, and then you think, people say you need a bunch of new defensemen. And, you know, we would like to try to upgrade if we can, but even with the same group, we showed a lot of progress. So part of that is becoming more accustomed to the way we had to play as a team. Part of it was our forwards doing a better job of not putting our defense in such a bad spot. So it's really a team, it's a team approach. But you're right. If we can find a way to upgrade our defensemen, we will. But I do think even with the current group of guys, we're looking for them to improve and to take a step forward. We did see signs of that as the year went on. So I think, but we need to keep, we need to be better on our defensive side.
Do you think any of those young guys will break in?
Potentially. But it doesn't do really anybody good to sort of prognosticate that right now. Like, let's just let it play out and we'll see how it goes. Especially for defensemen, it's hard to play as a young defenseman, your first year pro, to jump into the NHL. I mean, a few guys do it around the league every year, a handful, not many. And there's a lot of great NHL defensemen that spent a couple years. Duncan Keith's a guy right close to home here. He spent a couple, two full seasons in the minors. I don't think it hurt him. He's have a Hall of Fame career. So, you know, that's something that's hard to really roadmap who's going to be here when. We just need these guys to keep taking a step forward, and when they're ready and when we need them in Chicago, they'll be here.
And how realistic is it to expect the guys who had career years this year to sustain or even exceed that? You almost have to head into the offseason thinking that that may have been more the exception than the rule with some of the numbers that they put up.
Yeah, I don't buy into that. I understand that's probably a common narrative around here that the one thing I know is we can't predict what's going to happen next year for any of our guys. Across the league, players have good seasons followed by years when they're down. Nobody would have predicted it. I think we all know these players. I think you're referring to guys like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. I mean, they're elite players, Hall of Famers. They have a ton of pride. They put a lot of work into their preparation, and if anything, I think it's exciting that they had such great seasons. I don't look at that as a negative at all. I think that they showed that they've got a lot of hockey left. So I realize not everybody sees it that way, but I think it's reason for excitement and optimism to see how they led our team this year, and there's no reason in my mind that they can't be just as good next year. So to me, it's not going to be a failure if they both finish 2 points below where they are now, or 5 points below, or 5 points above. It's not really about how many points they get. It's about their contribution to the team. And this year, they had a big, huge contribution. I think looking at our power play, you know, they played a big role in that. And you know, we want that to be even better. I think that was a bright spot in the second half, but we want to build on that and to be even better next year. So. You know, I think it's a great story that those two guys at the age of 30 had the seasons they did, and there's no reason they can't build on it.
Stan, how would you evaluate Jeremy and the job that he did, especially towards the end of the season?
I thought Jeremy did a fantastic job of keeping our group together, keeping our guys focused on the next game, even early on when there were some struggles and there was it was a trying time. It was his first opportunity as an NHL head coach, and he had a lot of persistence and positivity, and he just stuck with it. Let's keep trying, guys. And I think certainly it's nice to see a reward when the team starts to click and you start to see the wins coming on, and you realize that you know, his patience paid off. And, you know, there's always going to be challenges year to year. Just because we ended this year on a better note doesn't mean we're going to necessarily start strong. But I think one thing we learned about this year is the importance of a stronger start. That's really what did us in here this year. So full credit to Jeremy for having the conviction to stick with it, the positivity. He didn't really change his approach even when the wins weren't there. He was pretty consistent, and I think in time our guys found the path ahead, and it led us to a good spot.
You heard Stan there being asked about Alex DeBrincat's contract situation, and with Nick Schmaltz signing, what was it, a 7-year contract worth an average of just under $6 million with the Arizona Coyotes. I don't think, unless Nick Schmaltz was going to have the same type of season that he had last year, and over the first couple of months, he clearly wasn't going to have that here with the Blackhawks. It was causing some frustration. Went to Arizona, played well, but in return, Dylan Strome played well. Brennan Perlini played well in spurts. And then you have Alex DeBrincat. Strome and DeBrincat can be restricted free agents a year from now, and contract talk, you heard Stan there say it's way too premature to discuss Alex's situation, but with if Nick Schmaltz is going to make an average of $5.85 million a year with what Alex DeBrincat has done production-wise in his first 2 years, it's going to be a little higher than that.
Well, I think you predicted DeBrincat's would, or we, you know, everyone kind of thought DeBrincat's would be more than that. Anyways, you figure at least, I don't know, what does he try to get? 8. He's a discount at 7.5. But you know who I think whose contract this affects is the guy that was traded for him in Strome, because you know Schmaltz is very lucky to get this. And, you know, good for him. It's a tough situation to be in. He was playing well right after the trade, got a season-ending injury and a lower body injury, and didn't play the rest of the season. Obviously, so to get that lucrative long-term deal, I mean, it's crazy. And you know, I think that's probably what, given the season Strome's had with 51 points in 58 games since coming to the Hawks, you know, you figure whether they're trying to probably sign him at $5 million, and this might impact that a little bit. It might not too. He's, you know, I'm sure he's more than happy to stay in Chicago and play with his buddy DeBrincat. So, you know, you got to figure there probably was going to be some kind of a hometown discount in there anyways.
And obviously that factors into the salary cap space that Stan does have moving forward here, whether he pushes the, you know, kicks the rock down the road a little bit and, you know, risk that price going up even more. But with some, you know, welcome salary cap space, he also has to figure in what he's going to have to shell out for those two guys in particular. I mean, it was, you know, the fear of that was part of the reason and he traded Artemi Panarin, and Brandon Saad came back at a fixed price that he knew he was going to have to pay over the extent of the deal that Saad eventually signed there. So you also heard me ask Stan about whether it's realistic to expect that Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews can build off of or at least match the career years that they have. Same for DeBrincat with 41 goals, although he didn't go to that conclusion. And I can also include Erik Gustafsson in that mix as well, whether those guys are ever going to be as productive as they were last season. He thought it was going to, you know, he took it as a very much glass half full that he's excited about them reaching those types of numbers, and there's no reason that they shouldn't necessarily do it again. Yeah, I'm kind of the mindset that you almost have to safeguard yourself in building depth on that roster and not necessarily bank on those guys having, you know, 41 goals and 35 goals and 44 goals again next season. That's not necessarily money in the bank from this point moving forward, even though they did it this year.
Yeah, no, you don't want to have to depend on those guys doing that. I mean, we've seen how consistent Kane has been. Toews, with a few bad seasons, maybe he's working through something. Maybe he's not, but you know, he changed his training regimen heading into this past season, and it worked. You know, I think that had to be the biggest thing, just how much lighter he was on his skates, how much more involved in the play he was, and carrying the puck, his possession, and all that. And look, you talk about, you know, the team tweaking things. Tavis said even he, with his training regimen, is going to tweak a couple of things this offseason, which, I mean, you know, very interesting to you wonder what he's, what does that mean? He's going to spend an extra 2 minutes on a treadmill? I don't know, because he looks so good this year from whatever he did last year. So,
and an extra 2 minutes on the treadmill for both of us. That, that's more than a tweak.
Doctor's orders starting after the podcast. No, I think it's, you know, it's just, it's great to see those guys do that. Obviously, huge positive, and you, like you were alluding to, Chris, you make sure the right guys are around them, because you don't want Patrick Kane double shifting every game in every situation, every you know, way more time on a power play than he should have. That was another thing Bowman discussed. Colleton, actually, we're going to get to later, a bit more discussed targeting, using Kane the right way.
Yeah, and the same goes for Jonathan Davis. His season is even more fantastic with his career numbers when you also take into account how much he is used in crucial situations. This circles back to finding another good faceoff guy you can rely upon, because David Camp has been hot and cold. I think he ended up the season under 50% anyway. Dylan Strome really struggled in the faceoff dot, even though in his previous time in Arizona, he was very good. He was up around 54%. When he came here, he started struggling. But, you know, you use Kane on power play. You use him on penalty kill. You use him on defensive zone faceoffs. And, you know, you roll him out there in the important times of the game, building up that roster as he grows older. And that's why, part of the reason why I asked Dan that question, is because he is used so much and in such, you know, stressful, heavy minute situations, that I don't know if you can necessarily, you hope that he can repeat what he did, but I don't know if you can necessarily bank it on the other side of 30, even though we reach those numbers at the age of 30. All right, before we talk Jeremy, let's hear from Jeremy at the farewell press conference with some of the things he had to say about his team's progress, his team still not being good enough, and then we'll talk a little bit about our thoughts on Jeremy's first year as head coach of the Blackhawks after we hear from him himself.
Ultimately, you know, we want to get in, and we want to get into the playoffs. We want to still be playing. It's a disappointment to not be. We thought we were on our way and had a chance. But I think ultimately the progression, we got better. And we got some things to build on going into next season. We will continue to make progress, but we're not starting from scratch. And that's exciting. And, you know, there's got an opportunity to build relationships with all these guys, and they know me and I know them, and I just think it will allow us to, you know, we need to have a much better start. That ultimately, it was too big a hole to crawl out of where we were in December. But I think we position ourselves with a lot of work in the off season here and in training camp to have a much better beginning to the season.
Jeremy, what's your top priority to fix this offseason to come back and trade?
Well, I think it's still defensively, both 5-on-5, certainly the penalty kill. I think we saw probably more progress 5-on-5 in the second half, well, obviously, than the penalty kill. And we showed that we can be a dynamic offensive team, and we can put the puck in the net and play a, you know, a quick strike transition style. If we get better defensively, that's only going to get better. We'll be even more dangerous with the puck. And again, we made progress, and that's good. We can just continue on, and we'll be a much harder team to play against, I think.
Does the PK need someone to come in from without the organization, a specialist of some sort? Or do you believe that the guys you have can turn up, what was the worst PK in the league or something like that?
Well, we're going to look at everything, for sure. We're going to look at, you know, obviously tactically, and we're going to look at the personnel and how we're using guys and try to put them in the best situation we can. And maybe that's new, different guys who weren't getting the opportunity, or maybe that's someone from outside. We got to look at everything, and we will.
Jeremy, what is your blueprint for a defenseman that you say, this is what we want to go find for agency or trade, this is what you tell the guys that you have now you want them to be?
Yeah, well, I think you need a mix. We can't all play like Gus, you know, and that's, but at the same time, We want guys who can transition the puck. If you're able to break out clean and get from deep, once you win the puck back, if you can make a tape-to-tape play and break out clean and get going the other way, then it helps you defensively too. So probably if we're looking to improve, again, it's defending hard, whether that's up the ice at the, you know, at their blue line or at our blue line, or getting out of D zone. That's probably the number one priority for us now, and what I think it's the easiest to improve on too. It's just bearing down, finding a way to, whether that, like I said, defending the rush, defending the line, forcing turnovers, or in D zone coverage, finding a way to get a stop, finding a way to create a loose puck and then winning the battle and going the other way.
You often seem to paint it as something that could be done, something that is a choice. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like guys were resistant to that at times, sure, unwilling to play the way you want?
No, I just think it's that we're not far enough along into progression and changing how we want to play. It's difficult to have a really tight gap because it's a lot of work. And you got to, whether that's keeping your shift short, whether that's just being willing to commit to it. If you have a tighter gap, it's easier to defend. But it's tough work. But everyone can do it. It's not a question of skill to have a tight gap. I mean, you just got to do it. You got to move. You got to get up. And then it's easier to defend. But it's a habit, too. And I think when you can't practice, it's a lot of just video, and it's a lot of talking, it's a lot of communication, and there's a benefit to that, and I think you can make strides, but we also got to practice more.
Did your forwards get to the point where they were playing defensively the way that you wanted, or is that also still something you're working
on? Well, it's better than it was. We're not where we need to be. I don't think if you compare how our forwards play to some of the top defensive teams, I don't think we're there. And I mean, some of the games where we really did, you know, where the back pressure was excellent and the response when the puck turns over from offense to defense, when we were flying back with not just one guy but two and three forwards, then all of a sudden our defense looked really good. And that's no coincidence. So we're going to continue to stress that. And again, that's one more thing that you, right from the beginning of training camp and practice time, it's this is how we have to play. And if we do, then we're going to be a much better team defensively.
Is it a fine line for some of those guys who are obviously great offensive players to be on the right side of the check, that decision-making? Is that something you're going to insist on?
It's just a habit. And again, just because you're doing that doesn't mean you're giving up offense. In fact, I believe you get more. You get the puck back quicker, you force turnovers, then you have transition opportunities. If you're slow on the way back, then there's no back pressure, then the D can't hold the gap, and then it's a clean entry, and then you're playing D zone, and then you waste your shift. So we got to do it.
Jeremy, how confident and comfortable are you that when it comes to personnel decisions, especially this offseason, that it'll be, you know, your voice will be heard and it will be that kind of collaboration to, even if you're pounding your fist on the desk to go get a guy, that you'll be heard?
Well, it's not pounding the fist on the desk. We're talking all the time. We talk almost every day during the season. It's a back and forth with regard to the roster or how we're playing or throwing ideas around tactically. And it's going to be no different here. We're going to watch a lot of hockey. We're going to talk about the team. What do we need to win? We're all on the same page. So excited for the off season. We got a lot of work to do in a lot of different ways.
Do you want to use Kane less moving forward? Do you think that had an impact on just how heavily you were forced to lean on him in the earlier months?
I would like to be more use him in a more targeted way. If we're going to play him a lot, we want it to be in the best situation for him to produce. And I think there were times this year, you know, whether it was injuries or we were having trouble scoring goals early on or we were behind, you know, the first 3 months that I started, we're behind almost every game. So you're forced to, we're trying to manufacture offense, trying to manufacture depth, trying to get him away from a matchup. We'd like to not do that every game. You know, can he do it? Yeah, he can do it. He can play 25 minutes, no problem. He looks like there's some games, you know, I'd say to him, listen, I got to back off a little bit here. He's like, why? I feel great. And he looked great. He was flying. But I don't want to do that every night.
Jeremy Carlson's record ends up being 30-28-9. Over the last 50 games that you heard Stan Bowman talking about, the Blackhawks, 27, 16, and 7. That would get them into the playoffs. That's 61 points through 50 games. So that would certainly be at a playoff pace. But, again, changes will be made. The degree of changes will find out, but you certainly can't expect to go into next season with largely the same group of guys without, you know, a few key new faces in there, and hope that the improvement just comes from within and from being in that system once again. But all in all, I was really impressed. I don't know about you, Scott, but I was really impressed by Jeremy. You know, I'd been exposed to him a little bit last year during Rockford's playoff run. He also, you know, stopped by during the season, ran some practices like Rockford did again this year. But always impressed with him as a person. I think even more so as a coach. And the fact that, who knows truly behind the scenes if, you know, perhaps there was any type of friction when he first came over, especially within a group of guys who had basically played only for Joel Quenneville throughout his career, their careers. But everything that we hear is that everyone bought in, even though he was 33 going on 34. And the steady hand and the way he ran this club, giving veterans their due when necessary in terms of playing time and other things, and pretty much the way he managed a game, especially as the season went along, I thought he got better at that. And we said before, we knew Jeremy was going to be the guy once Joel left. People were surprised it happened this quickly. Everyone was surprised that it happened this quickly. But I think now we're starting to see what Stan also saw when, you know, he kind of uncovered this guy or discovered this guy a few years back in Sweden.
Yeah, no, I'm also very impressed with the job he did in a very tough situation this year. I was reading someone today who said, you know, he wasn't a success because they didn't make it to the playoffs. And that's, you know, you measure every coach, every team, not every player, but every team and coach by that every year. And I don't agree with him in particular. When you look at what he came into, we were there on November 6th when they fired Q and brought Jeremy in. You know, he wasn't a smile anywhere for Jeremy or, you know, good luck, good for you. It was all, and, you know, it was also appropriate because Joel meant so much to the team and in the city. So a tough situation for him to come into. Like you said, his age, you know, I think age mattered too much, except when you look at the room and how, you know, guys are his age. They have to go in there and say, no, I want you to do these things and play this way. And them going forward, one of the themes, again, that we've already kind of beaten to the ground, it was beaten to the ground today, is them having a full camp with his system that they had to, you know, really start learning on the fly if they wanted to then, if they were ready to then, as a group, on November 6th, you know, and kind of end up getting it the second half of the season and utilizing it the right way. Once they have a full camp to do that, you know, things really should pan out. And for him to get them in the last week where they're still mathematically in it in terms of making the wild card, getting a wild card spot, and them finishing over 500, you know, I think with everything he jumped into and the way he ended up turning things around, they lost five straight, leading to Quenneville's firing, lost a bunch of games November, December, right after he got the job, and then things started to turn around. So I think a success, and yeah, a lot of credit goes to him.
Yeah, I'm really curious and anxious to see how he further grows as an NHL head coach. Over the last 50 games, 27, 16, and 7, and hopefully an even better opportunity with whatever changes are made. And speaking of change, by all accounts here as we record on Sunday night, Joel is on his way to beautiful Florida, no, not to retire, but to become head coach of those Florida Panthers, reunited with Dale Talon. And yeah, there were three places I thought potentially he would land. I was hoping he wouldn't land in Minnesota, although I haven't heard any news today that Bruce Boudreau is out. But, you know, that mix there with a former Nashville guy taking over as GM, and then Bruce Boudreau guaranteeing they'd make the playoffs, and instead they finished behind the Blackhawks in last place. Yeah, forgive me, I've been up to my eyebrows in Blackhawks here, so I'm not sure whether there's any news on Bruce Boudreau today. I thought that might be a possibility because there is talent up there in Minnesota that just hasn't reached any potential. Philadelphia with some real high-end offensive players there already, some young defensemen that are already on that roster that have a lot of promise, and most importantly, it appears as though they have their goalie of the future in Carter Hart. I thought that might be the most likely possibility, and the only reason I didn't necessarily see him going to Florida was that's a dead hockey area. But Dale's apparently banking on it that he is going to be the guy to turn things around. And, man, they have some talent down there offensively in Barkov and Huberdeau and Dadonov and Trocheck and Hoffman, a couple of other players there. They need to get better defensively. But you know what this is also going to do is it's going to stoke the fire of Panarin and Bobrovsky going down to Florida to Panarin reunite with Joel and reunite with Alexander Barkov, who he has a good friendship with. The old package deal might be headed to the warm weather, I'm thinking. I think that gets even louder and louder, even as Columbus finds a way to make the playoffs and they have to play a Florida team, except it's the Tampa Bay Lightning.
That's what people refer to us as around the Blackhawks, the package deal. You get Bowden and King. Do you think Q springs for a Disney annual pass? How far?
His kids are grown.
Yeah, they're grown. No, did you believe any of those reports that he's going to go to Philly? I mean, people kept hammering those reports that he's linked to the Flyers.
I kind of did, yeah.
Why in the world would we go to the Flyers?
Why not? I mean, there's Couturier and Giroux and JVR who am I missing there? The one center. But there's talent there. There's a lot of good young talent defensively. And I thought maybe the Carter Hart thing, the way he's developed and kind of taken that situation that's been a nightmare for them for 20 years now, I thought that might be the door that would open to him in terms of instantly contending. But he has an opportunity to do that here with Florida. If he gets some defense down there, he has an opportunity to do the same thing down in Florida.
I shouldn't think you'd want to live in Philly with the people of Philly.
Yeah. But not. There are places that Joel could stay at.
Yeah, I knew they were a playoff team. I just didn't know if they could, when they could get to the conference final or go deep. But, yeah, we'll see how he does in Florida. Yeah. Good for him if he accepts the job.
Yeah, and July 1st is going to be really, really interesting, not only here, but in terms of where some of those stars go. Hey, before we hear from Doc Emrick, because I want to play a little interview that I had with him when he was in last week for the Blues game, as you look at some of those playoff matchups, any particularly intriguing to you? I find it amazing that Columbus struggled and then found a way to get it together over the last 2 weeks of the season to sneak into the playoffs, and then they draw the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that is a huge, huge challenge for them, playing the best team. But you know what? They could probably put a scare in them. They're one of those teams that's hitting the postseason hot. But to me, the St. Louis Winnipeg one is going to be real interesting to watch here, as that home ice advantage was, down to the final game, as a matter of fact, on Saturday night. And the other one is the Islanders in Pittsburgh. I'm really interested to see how that series shakes out.
What do you think is going to happen there? That's one team I wasn't familiar with. I felt like was the Islanders. Mm-hmm. Like, can they match up with the Penguins?
Oh, I think they can. Based on the jumps that they have made defensively this year and their goaltending, we won't circle back to. By the way, we won't circle back to our mid-season awards picks.
Next year, we're not going to circle back to this either. That could be an interesting series.
And Pittsburgh's been real inconsistent. They've done enough to get back in.
Yeah,
and I don't like the way Winnipeg's played down the stretch. But you know what? Once these playoffs start, St. Louis has been red hot. You don't know how a rookie goalie is going to react to playoff situation. Winnipeg, I don't like the way they've been playing down the stretch. I don't like the way that either San Jose or Vegas have been playing down the stretch. But, they get each other there.
And that is important, too, because you think these good teams that are dangerous and look like juggernauts early in the season, the first half, that they can just flip a switch. But Tyler Seguin was telling me that you can't, that there's not. And we've seen that with the Hawks, too. So speaking of him, I think Dallas and Nashville could have the makings of two really cool places. So,
Our colleague Tracy Myers, gosh darn it, she has to cover that series.
No, I told her enjoy it after the media availability today. It's going to be a good series to, attend. But I think that, we've seen Dallas a bit. Nashville's a dangerous team. That could be a fun one. I think I like Boston-Toronto, too. I actually don't know who's going to win that. I have to think about it.
See, I have no doubt Boston's going to win that series.
Really?
They won it last year, and Toronto has really struggled down the stretch. They can't defend.
They can't defend.
So I think that might be end up being a fairly quick series. So whenever we do our next podcast, we'll obviously circle back to some of these thoughts. And we won't circle back to some of our mid-season picks for some of the honors.
Do you think we're going to do one before the final?
We'll definitely do one of those.
Something for that.
On that note, I got a chance to catch up with Doc Emmerich, who unfortunately will not be here after his most previous appearance on Wednesday at the United Center when the Blackhawks took on St. Louis, the last national game of the year for the Blackhawks. Every spring, we're so used to seeing Doc here with Edzo and doing those national games. And I had a chance to catch up with him. We played this on the post-game show on Wednesday night. But Doc is so good, so kind, such a gracious guy, and a smart one as well when it comes to this league and other matters, too. We thought you'd enjoy this before we come back and wrap this thing up.
Well, are you going to miss Chicago as much as Chicago is going to miss you this spring?
I am going to, yes. There are a lot of wonderful memories of being in Chicago at this time of the year, and that includes like three different decades. So, that you know, all of this is cyclical, and there was a period of time that was kind of empty, preceded by a time that was full, and then a time that was empty preceded by a time over at the Raucous Place that was full too. So this is just one of those gaps that's very hard for fans to live through, but there'll be other days.
As you get set to go on this exhilarating ride for 2 months without us, what are your impressions about how close the Blackhawks are, and what are you hearing around the league in terms of the direction they're headed, even though they're missing out here for a second straight year?
Well, it was heartening in that you got such tremendous production from star players and the resiliency they had to bounce back from, especially in Tave's case, from a season that he didn't like, and all of those things that have been probably talked to death in Chicago. But it's not an overnight repair, as they have learned in Detroit, and as a former 21-year guy around New Jersey, as they learned in New Jersey. It doesn't happen really fast, but it seems to be on target in Detroit to happen a little faster than I thought, and it seems to be headed to a faster conclusion here. I don't know if that means playoffs next year, but it might, because this is a heartening sort of finish to see, especially with a healthy Crawford and the performance he put on starting 12 straight, or was it 13? It might have been 13, and so there certainly is reason to hope. But when you are 30th in goals against, and when you are 31st in penalty kill, you have some serious repairs to make, and defensively, and you don't usually make the playoffs with those kinds of numbers. And I think that was probably the undoing, and then that stretch after Joel left, when they really suffered mightily just after the transition. As my buddy Mr. Olchek would say, an old adage about you can't win a horse race in the first quarter mile, you can sure lose one. And I think back in the first quarter, that's probably where this tailed off.
How do you regard Jeremy Colleton, and how is he regarded around the league so far?
Well, I think that in a year in which there have been some tremendous coaching jobs, I mean, you always wind up looking at the record, and it's very close to NHL 500, which is wins and losses are about the same, and the extra time washes out. So in terms of getting done what he wanted to get done, I think he's done a splendid job of that. It was unfortunately only good enough to get 1 hour of second wild card, but he did have the loss of his goaltender, which was significant too. This is a year when it was very hard to cast a ballot for three guys for Coach of the Year, because there were about 10 that did splendid jobs, and one of them was the other coach in this game tonight, and Craig Berube, and he did get one of my three, because that was a turnaround that was of magnificent proportions. But this is a franchise that does not sit tight on things, and they have decisions that they need to make ongoing in terms of how they make this better in the year ahead, in terms of player personnel and every other way. But I feel like it will get better, because this is not a group that rests. And the one sure way to have it get worse is to rest. They don't rest here.
What do you, as you get to see a lot of teams, what do you make of the West this year? Because either it's been it has been competitive, but it also seems like the top end teams have not been able to get that one last push to kind of separate themselves. It's kind of a bunched up pack here.
Yeah, and we have been in a league this year in the Western Conference where everybody's had a really big streak and a really bad one. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Blackhawks won 7 straight at one point. They won 5 straight at one point. The Blues won 12 in a row at one point. But you look at the Jets and how strong they were at one time, and Nashville, how they won the first 8 games away from home. And then where have they been? What happened to them? And it points up the parity, and it points up that no one can seem to generate anything overwhelming except maybe Boston and except Secretariat down in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And that is the most impressive team that I've seen since the salary cap was brought about. I mean, they've dominated. Yeah. But there is something mysterious that happens in the 3 days from the end of the season to the start of the playoffs. And a lot of it is who you draw and whether that team is a physical team against a more finesse team. And if you beat them, how much you get beat up in the process, because it's 4 rounds. It's not 1, it's not 2, it's 4. And if you get a better route to the playoffs than the team coming out of the West, you stand a better chance of winning the Stanley Cup final. So it'll be intriguing to see who Tampa Bay plays. We don't know yet. And it'll be intriguing to see how they handle the first round. Because when you're the heavy, heavy favorite, the first round is always hard. I'll never forget, I was listening to Scotty Bowman talk from the floor of Chicago Stadium after the final game of the regular season, and his team had galloped away with 110 points or something. And he said, I always worry about the first round because the team that we will play, and this was 1-8, mm-hmm. the team that we will play has had to play well above itself just to get here to play us. And we haven't had that kind of pressure, and it'll be a challenge for us. Well, coaches always say that. Because they want to have a way to get their guys gunned up. Right, right. Coaches always say that, yeah. But there's an element of truth to it, too. Yeah. And that's what makes this whole tournament coming up so exciting. Yeah. But you're right, I'll sure miss the trips to Chicago.
And speaking of which, you had your guy back all year this year, Edzo. And I'm sure we loved having him around here every day. But what did you learn from him over the course of the past year and a half?
That he can teach as many people about cancer as he can about horse racing and hockey. We can learn a lot about those two sports from him, but I think the number one thing that I came away with was that there may be people that are going to be diagnosed next week or have been last week that followed his story last year because he made it so public and because he worked with the Blackhawks and he worked with us at NBC on the off week while he was getting treatments. And they will have learned from that. Chemo's rotten. But that guy didn't let it get him down. And he even showed up in front of people and he worked in the off week. I was having lunch with an oncologist friend of mine, and this was last spring, and he was talking to me about Eddie. He didn't know him, but he knew that I worked with him, and he knew what he was going through. And he said, where is he now? And I said, he's finished number 12, and that's it. And he said, he shook his head, and he said, you know, a lot of my patients get to 10, and they can't take it anymore. So, hats off to him, he got to 12. But, so I think I learned as much about that from him, even though I'm a survivor myself. I didn't have much to go through. I had prostate cancer, it was caught early. So, I had an easy route, no chemo, and no radiation. So, my trip was easy, his was hard. So, I'm just glad he's there. And I'm sure I'm going to learn more, whether I care to or not, I'm going to learn more about the Kentucky Derby because it's getting closer and closer all the time. And I will gladly learn it because my 94-year-old stepmom living in central Indiana always says, who does Eddie like in the race? And I always make a wager legally for her on race day.
Well, enjoy the ride without us again, unfortunately, this year. And always great visiting with you. Have fun.
Thank you. 50,000 watts, and that means I can get you day and night, and, of course, with the stream all the time. And from early in the morning until sometimes in the middle of the night. How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning? It's mystifying to me, but I love listening to all of you, and I thank you so much.
Thank you. The great Doc Emrick, it was a pleasure to join him on Wednesday. Glad we had a chance to catch up. We wanted to do it all season long, and luckily I had one last opportunity on Wednesday to do that, so hope you enjoyed it. Unfortunately, no Blackhawks games for him to call this spring. And Doc, as is his usual custom when he comes here, he goes to lunch at Palace Grill. And we decided to do the same. I've been telling myself I was going to do it at some point before the end of the season, and I was up against it because when Friday rolled around, I still hadn't done it. But we expanded the group. You expanded your group that you usually take over to George's place, and we all had ourselves a good time. We posted a picture on Twitter, and funny, I'm the guy in that picture without any food in front of me because I came late. Everyone else has food in front of them, but then the way my shirt is sitting, it looks like I'm the guy who just finished. Which was a humongous omelet and hash browns, but it looked like I had already eaten it the way my shirt was sitting in the front of that picture. But anyway, it was a good old raucous time, as it always is, with our buddy George over at Palace.
Yes, I expanded the group. I opened my arms to yourself and John Weideman, it was great to have John there. I mean, you know, John left a little after you got there, maybe, not because...
No, it was because I showed up.
But I was going to say, the owner, George. So if you go to Palace Grill, a bunch of great Hawks memorabilia and pictures on the wall. Great.
There is no space on the wall,
no,
by the way.
Nor should there be. Just great. A great, you know, diner, grill, lunch place. Really good breakfast food or lunch. And you might catch the owner, George, in there, who is a character. And he is known to tell some jokes. Some people may find them a bit off color. I appreciate them, and I have been going there myself for 5 years, a lot of the writers, media people, much longer, but I think he set a record for telling jokes at our lunch. He was so excited to see us all.
Yeah, maybe that was the reason. I don't know. And by the way, if you're faint of heart, George's voice is probably loud enough where if you're at an adjoining table or one across the restaurant, you'll probably end up hearing the jokes whether you like him or not anyway. So Georgie Dice Clay was on a roll when we saw him on Friday, and you have to have a strong stomach while you're eating as well and when listening to those jokes in order to accomplish those two things at the same time. But we appreciate George's hospitality. It's been a long time since I've been in there, so it was really great to go back in there, reconnect. And it was funny. He brought up the one time when I used to do Shoot the Puck on the TV side. George shot the puck one night when I was doing it, and prior to the on-air portion of it, he was on a roll with his jokes, you know, underneath the stands before we went out there. And on the air, I asked him, George, are there any jokes that you can share with us on the air that are suitable for on the air? And he goes, Chris, yeah, I just told like about 20 minutes worth of jokes, and I don't think any of them are suitable for the air, so you're not going to have one here. Oh, so great to see George once again. And finally, as we wrap up here, a near tragedy at your household over the last couple of days that you filled me in on during a bathroom break during the Friday game. Lord. And you're actually a pretty lucky guy there, considering some of the circumstances.
There's funny elements to the story, not about what happened. I was interviewing. So after our lunch, we had a very nice lunch. Had a good morning skate. Got my preview in, and I'm interviewing a comedian after our lunch, a famous comedian named Tom Segura that will be on Forbes in about a week, and I got about three questions left, and I see a text from my wife. The refrigerator just set on fire. Okay. So I go, Tom, can I have your email? I'm going to have to send you the last three questions, you just write a response. But he says he was cool about it. We're going to do that. Caller, yeah, they were home, smelled something funny, just went, took the kids to the park, my wife and my mother-in-law, and they came back. One of them opened the fridge, and it was smoking. Fire department came. I mean, just, you know, just another thing to deal with the house and worry about. And so that's, you know, they went out and got like a temporary fridge. We're going to get a new one soon. It's all going to be fine. And so I'm telling you the story in the press box. And I hear a very concerned voice who says, "You're lucky somebody was home." Right. And he's exactly right. And he comes out as Jamal Maris, was also concerned about my house. And I appreciate Jammer his concern. And he was right. You know, we're lucky they were home. Could have been disastrous. Just a crazy situation.
Yeah, I'm glad everyone's healthy. Wait, I thought refrigerators are supposed to cool things off, not heat things up. What happened? What happened?
We must have ordered the one that actually heats up your food.
My goodness.
It got too hot.
That's just a weird thing, but yeah, I'm glad everyone's all right. And if no one was home, who knows what kind of damage had been done. Yeah. Was there much other damage, or everything got caught in time?
No, it was a, you know, if you still open a fridge now, if you ever get tired of not smelling that electric smoke smell, smells like a couple gassers, then you just open the fridge. But it was just a little bit of smoke and a bad smell.
Speaking of bad smell, there was one day last week when I was home.
What?
And I stepped outside to go run some errands. I walk out of the house, and it is the strongest natural gas smell that I have, the strongest I have ever smelt in my entire life. And, you know, it's around the house, I even went towards the edge of the subdivision. I was still hearing it. So, you know, I call NICOR. Yeah, we've had about 200 or 300 calls from your area on this. But they still came out to the house about, you know, they eventually made it about an hour later. And they just said there was some mysterious, you know, gas odor that wasn't caused by natural gas in the area, a leak or anything like that, that was making its way across town or something like that. And they started getting calls when it was way east of us, and it was gradually making its way west. And it was like a mystery because all the testing that they did, you know, it all came out fine in terms of it being natural gas, but that's exactly what it smelled like. And even when I left, ran some errands, and came back, rolled the car window down as I was entering the subdivision, not necessarily on my block, it was still a really strong smell, which prompted me to make the call. But the eighth wonder of the world, yeah, I guess.
We're both okay now.
Yes. So, but you still have to deal with that smell, though.
Yeah, I got to get rid of that fridge and get a new one in. But so that's that smell, your smell, not yours, the town's.
Thank you.
Yours is nice.
I've got my high karate in.
So yours is rolling through your town like the fog, like a Stephen King movie, just rolling through your town.
See it, but
I mean, by the way, you described it, I'm surprised. And you, in fact, because you smelt it, but you did not dealt it.
I did not. Right. Yeah, I had a very bland diet the day before. So, on that note, you know, we're gonna have to figure out when to do another one here. Yeah. Maybe we'll do it in a couple weeks. I do have another interview I'd like to run here. Since we're going, this is the fattest. Speaking of Palace Grill, this is the fattest podcast we have had. But they're usually this way at the end of the season.
PHAT.
Right, and so we'll take a break here, but maybe come back in a couple weeks. We'll see if Rockford makes the playoffs. It's looking dim right now. They have three games left. I think they're 3 or 4 points out of a playoff spot, trying to repeat. Even though, you know, they sent Dylan Sakura down there, they made a couple of trades to try to, you know, get the offense up to snuff. But right now they're on the outside looking in. If they do make the playoffs, or perhaps they'll have a season-ending media day up there, maybe I'll run up there, get a couple of interviews with a Sakura or a Yoki Haru or even their coach Derek King, and also run an interview I did with Brian Campbell concerning a great piece that Blackhawks Originals is running on Blackhawks TV right now called Shift Change, and it's with Adam Boquist. Brian Campbell had a chance multiple times this season to go there and check on Adam Boquist, mentor him, give him some tips, kind of coach him along. He had a good relationship with the London coaching staff, the team that he is on. And I go a little bit more in depth on how Adam was doing this year, They're currently in the second round of the playoffs of the OHL against Guelph. And Mackenzie Entwistle is on that Guelph team. But Adam Boqvist had himself a lights-out first round of the playoffs. 6 goals in 4 games, I believe. And so now, as we record on Sunday, today was game 2 of that series. And maybe we can circle back to that conversation that I ran on the post-game show, the final post-game show on Saturday with Brian, a little bit more in depth on how Adam's coming along and how he wanted to get more involved in kind of the coaching aspect of things after his first year of retirement. And with this crop of young defensemen that the Blackhawks have brought along, we would run that on an additional podcast as well. We'll just see what other kind of content that we have with the next couple of weeks, and we'll see how bad our playoff predictions are too. So that's a wrap. Thanks to everybody for listening this season. We will have more coming up in the off season and alert you via Twitter. I'm at @BowdenTweets. Scott is at Scott King Media, and we'll also do that on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy. We encourage you, as always, to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It'll be there and ready for you whenever we have a fresh one available. Leave a review too. And again, love to Joe Romano. In his busy schedule, he still manages fine to do this podcast, and this one was a whopper, folks, with the season wrap up here. Again, the Blackhawks failed to make the playoffs for a second consecutive year. Better finish than last year, and I'm pretty excited to see what transpires over the course of the offseason. Unfortunately, we have to wait at least, 3 more months here? This is April? Yeah. So, anyway, for Scott King, I'm Chris Bowden. Thanks, as always, for joining us. And we'll let you know when we pop up again with a new fresh podcast next time.